One of the questions I often get asked is, how did you get into it? Which I always think is a topic up for discussion between the actress and the bishop. Anyway, I thought of the wine trade when I was in the city, and mercifully the wine trade didn't think of me. Otherwise, my liver would have perished years ago. And then I thought, well, I didn't ever been any good at any cricket. So I wondered if I could write about it, and wrote to one or two people, and they all wrote back and said, no, you've got no experience. Well, then I went, I was an Arab by that stage of my life. I don't mean I wore a dish dash or anything like that, but I was a friend of a sort of E.W. Swanton, Jim Swanton, who wrote for the Daily Telegraph about the game, a great friend of cricket, but he was known, perhaps not unreasonably, by many people as Pomponius Ego. And in the 1930s, he'd founded a nomadic cricket club called the Arabs. And what he really liked to have as members were young chaps who had been to Eton, Harrow or Winchester, and then to Oxford or Cambridge. Jim was actually not at any of them, but spiritually at all five. And so I sort of fitted that bill, and I was an Arab, and they had a cocktail party at the Hyde Park Hotel, and I arrived, and I met someone who's now my greatest friend in life, Johnny Woodcock, who was cricket correspondent at the Times from 54 to 87. I think the finest writer who's ever written about the game. I include Cardus, Robertson, Glasgow, anyone you like. He still writes occasionally, and my goodness me, he's always worth reading. He writes absolutely splendid. Anyway, I met him. You know how you meet someone for the first time and you know you're going to get on, which is exactly what we did, and we got on terribly well. And he said, what are you doing? And I told him. And he said, I told him I was discontented. And he said, what do you want to do? And I said, well, I can do very important, tell him I want to write cricket. Oh, he said, you really? Well, he said, I don't know that I'd advise it. He said, I'd love to think I could help you, but I probably can't. But he said, if any chance does happen at the Times, of course I'll let you know. And he took my telephone number, and that was really it. And then next day I went off the city and got back in the evening to find through my front door in the hall one of the, do you remember those old virulently orange telegram forms? Well, one of those. And so I tore it open, and it said, would I ring a number in Hampshire? And it was signed Woodcock. So, of course, I was on the telephone lickety-split. Someone at the Times was ill, and they wanted someone to go and write cricket for 2 days, the following 2 days, Wednesday and Thursday, at Gravesend, where Kent were playing Somerset. So I rushed into the city, into Printing House Square, and met the sports editor. He was called Hennessy, and by the time he'd given me my first press ticket, he was 28-star Hennessy. And it was absolutely brilliant. And the next day, my wife, Joanna, and I set off for Gravesend, the Bat and Ball Ground. And my first press ticket allowed my car in and me in, didn't allow my wife in, which I thought was rather rough. So I had to pay for her. And we had a splendid day. And at 4 o'clock, I rang up the Times, as I was told to do, and said, how many words do you want? They said, 550. And I knew at once what War and Peace was all about. And it was a ghastly thought, and I shivered and shook, but managed to get it all out and dictated it. And then we thought, I don't know why we didn't go back to London, it was only 37 miles away, but we didn't. We decided to stay in Gravesend, then found all the hotels were full. So we turned our attention to the neighboring cathedral city of Rochester. Now, I don't know how well you know Rochester, but we found a sort of doss house, really, in the high street. And we had a room that passed for a double room. It was tiny. And we had what passed for dinner. It was really horrid. But we went to bed. And now sleeping in Rochester is really quite an art, because they have a lot of churches, you know. They have a cathedral and innumerable churches, and all around the cathedral. And they have municipal buildings, and they have big offices. And they all had chiming clocks, you know, all of them. And they chimed on the hour, at a quarter past the hour, at a quarter to the hour, at half past the hour, and at a quarter to the hour. And the extraordinary thing was that not one of them was synchronized. And so one spent the entire night listening to an out-of-tune, consistent cacophony of bells, of clock bell. Oh, it was awful. And to make matters even worse, one soon discovered that the city of Rochester had the randiest collection of tomcats in the kingdom. Anyhow, they'd all sighted a girlfriend on the same evening. They were yowling and screeching. And to make it even worse than that, they started rather noisily to deliver milk at 4:30. And at 6 o'clock, I thought, well, this is no good. I must get up and go and buy a copy of the Times and see if they printed anything. So I got up and went downstairs, and the night porter thought I was trying to do a runner. And he blocked my passage, and I said, it's all right, I've left my wife upstairs as surety. He didn't think it very funny either. And I ducked under his arm and went to the first newsagent, went in, an ordinary chap came up to me and said, "Good morning, sir, can I help you?" And I said, "Yes, please, I want a copy of the Times." And he looked very crestfallen, terribly crestfallen. He said, "Oh, I'm awfully sorry, sir, but I'm afraid I've already sold it." Funnily enough, when I got a copy right up the street, the high street, they printed everything I'd written and they did the next day, and I did two more days the following week and two more the week after that. And then I, on the basis of 6 days cricket, I rang up my office and said I'd left, which they didn't really much enjoy.